Great song from Kerry Clarkson. She is invincible. Now it's featured interviews with Grammy-winning artists who've worked with the likes of Elvis Presley, Michael Jackson and The Prodigy. It's been featured in national newspapers and written about by Sheryl Crow. And after just a few months, is already in the top 10% of podcast listenership on the whole planet. To find out all about it, I'm joined by Chris Simpson, who is the founder of the Stage Left podcast. Chris, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Alan. How's it
going? I'm all right, thank you. I need to start by owing you an apology, though, I think, because I keep calling it a blog. It's not a blog, it's a podcast. They're completely different things.
I wouldn't want any of your listeners to think I'm just sitting in a bedroom writing a load of rambling blogs.
It's
a podcast, which is essentially a series of audio documentaries featuring one-to-one interviews.
Brilliant. Well, we'll talk about them in just a moment. But before we do that, Chris, tell us something about your own background.
Okay, so, I mean, I've been in kind of a band and played music for kind of 15 years. And it's very hard to break in, obviously, into the music industry. And what I did, I was in a band. We did kind of cool stuff for a few years. But at the age of 25, I went and did a professional musicianship degree in Brighton. And what I found is that there's just so many great musicians out there. They've got so many stories to tell and so many people who've achieved amazing things who often you wouldn't know them by kind of either name or recognise. You know, you could be sitting next to them on the tube and they've played Wembley Stadium and stuff like that, you know.
So these are people that in the business you'd call session musicians?
Yeah, absolutely. Or actually full-time members of bands who've done amazing stuff but don't just happen to be the kind
in
the limelight. Yeah, absolutely.
Because it does tend to be one or two names in a band who are the people who everybody knows and who are sort of the public, you know, the famous names, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And what I found is I was very lucky for a decade. My now father-in-law, I won't say how he got them, but he used to be able to get access all area passes to a very well-known large-scale festival not too far away from here.
Right.
What ended up happening was that where I was kind of in a band and I wanted to know about breaking into the music industry, I had this fantastic opportunity of meeting some of my heroes and meeting a lot of people who were kind of really at the top of their game. And what I noticed is when they were coming off stage, like all the kind of perhaps groupies or people who are fans who had also these passes were just always going to the singer or always going to the front man or front one or two people, as you rightly say. And I noticed that you could actually have some quite in-depth conversations with people who've just headlined like a big festival if you just instead went to the keyboardist or the drummer or the bassist. So that's kind of planted the seed for what became the Stage Left podcast.
So then you created the podcast. Is it aimed at people generally who are interested in music, or are you specifically targeting people who are perhaps looking to break into the business professionally themselves?
It's both those sets of people, and it's also fans of the specific artists that have been the person who's featured has worked with. I think that's why it's getting a lot of listenership. Because you know, you do have young musicians listening into the episodes and kind of finding out the working practices of the greats. You know, it's not really a gossipy kind of podcast, so it's more kind of in depth about, okay, obviously you mentioned one episode was with a guy called Shane Keister, who was Elvis Presley's keyboardist, and so it's not too much about him kind of what's it like being on tour with Elvis. It's more about, okay, so how did the cues work, how did you know when to start songs, because Elvis very famously would just start singing, you know, Blue Suede Shoes or something like that, and the band had to come in and play. But what you found out from listening to the podcast was that he actually, when he was doing all his kung fu moves on stage, they were actually his cues to the band. And he said when he does his final punch, that's when the band comes in.
Wow, that is amazing. Because as an ordinary punter, that's just something you wouldn't even think about. You wouldn't think, you just take these things for granted. But there's a lot to it, obviously, to performing, particularly when musicians come together, and whether I suppose as a solo singer with a backing group or whatever, that's you know, it doesn't just all happen like that, does it? So you're aiming this at a wide variety of people, but looking at the, you know, the real sort of technicality of how things happen as well. And I know these aren't sort of 5 minute sort of soundbite interviews, are they? They're really sort of in depth. You know, people have really given you a lot of time, which is tremendous. And also, I noticed on your website that you want it to be something of a legacy for the families and friends of the people you've interviewed as well.
Absolutely, I felt that. You know, give you an example. When I was kind of doing my degree, a lot of the people who were tutors there were people who had been, again, done great stuff, and you kind of be sitting in the pub with them, and it's just like, oh, they tell this story about how they supported Stone Roses in Japan, or, you know, one guy, I'm not going to name him, but, you know, his band were the only band that Oasis ever opened for, so that Oasis supported his band. And, you know, he didn't want to kind of wear that on his sleeve and tell everybody all that. And I was thinking, you know, your family, you know, like growing up, they should know that. Do you know what I mean? You know, that's your kind of posterity and stuff. That's incredible. And that kind of really made me realize that these stories need to be told. You know, just because you don't recognize them, you know, for being the most famous celebrity as such, these people have achieved the kind of ambitions and dreams of a lot of young musicians. You know, they've played huge stadiums, they've been on tour with the greats, they've written or collaborated with some of, you know, the most legendary musicians there are. So I think it's important to tell their story and give them the spotlight.
Doesn't get much bigger than Elvis or Michael Jackson, does it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's there were a couple of great Phillips that I managed to get there, yeah.
You've got, is it 8 podcasts you've already got in the bag already?
I've recorded, good question, about 16, and I think 8 or 9 have been released.
And they're absolutely free to listen to?
Absolutely free. So you can listen to them on stageleftpodcast.com. They're free to listen to. You can download on iTunes. Obviously, it's on all, you know, if you just type it into the internet, it'll come up straight away. Obviously, on Facebook, we've got a Twitter account and stuff like that. So they're easy to find.
Very easy to find. I managed to do it. So if I can do it, then you can do it as well. And you've got one coming out, a new one coming out next week.
Yeah, so Monday's episode is with a guy called Mike Farrell, who has been playing with Morrissey for a number of years. But he also he's had an incredible career, because not only has he played with Morrissey, but he was also Alanis Morissette's keyboardist. He's actually now the American Idol musical director. And so it kind of got very interesting towards the end of the interview. I kind of asked a bit of a loaded question towards the end, which was, we talked about the artistic integrity a lot of Alanis Morissette and Morrissey, and he talks about tour. He was musical director for Macy Gray, who supported David Bowie, so he talks about being on tour with David Bowie and stuff and what he learned from that. And so then to be the musical director on American Idol, which obviously produces a very different type of musician, I kind of asked him if that was a slight contradiction, given that there's an argument that perhaps
you're choosing your words very carefully.
I am. You know, is a show like American Idol stifling the new Morrissey or the new Alanis Morissette? Can someone be that kind
because
of...
it's putting people very much in a particular commercial mold?
Absolutely, and obviously the main thing is that a lot of the musicians from there aren't allowed to write their own songs. They're not allowed to have kind of their own freedom. It's very much kind of you do X, Y, and Z, and then you will be you'll have a number one album.
And did he walk out of the interview at that point?
He gave a great answer, and I left it to the final question actually, so just in case that did happen.
I tend to do that as well.
Oh, okay, I can't wait for whatever that's going to be.
Well, very much looking forward to finding out how he responded to that, so we can pick that up. Were you releasing that on Monday?
That's going to be up Monday morning. I normally, a lot of people listen to podcasts on their commute into work, so I normally put a new episode up about kind of between 7 and 7:30 in the morning. So
brilliant. And we're actually going to hear Mike Farrell now, in fact, with Morrissey. So it's keyboards that Mike...
Yeah, this is him playing keyboards on a total classic Smith song. And he was a big fan of the Smiths as well. So he talks about what an honour it was to actually play on this song. I want to see people and I want to see life.
That is the brilliant Morrissey, along with Mike Farrell on the keyboards there. Mike Farrell was interviewed by my guest this morning, Chris Simpson, for his Stage Left podcast.
Working with eccentric characters, you must have worked with some. Are there any classic stories you want to share at this stage, or you're going to save it for your book?
I remember the first day that I got an audition for Oasis. I wasn't really a fan. I'm a softy southerner, you know. Mm-hmm. I got the call. I went in to the studio in London and met Noel again. Oh, I know how you're doing, blah, blah, blah. Okay. We did a song. And out of my peripheral vision, Liam comes through the door. And this is the height of the madness. This is 97. This is he hasn't slept for like 8 years or something. Done. And he comes in, and you know, all I knew about him was what I read in the newspapers. And he comes in, and when you play a Hammond, a B3 or C3, you often play it on this bench seat, which is a long seat. There's room for two people. And he comes to sit right. As I was playing, he came and sat right next to me, very close to me. And you know, I thought he was gonna punch me or something. This bespectacled, ginger-haired, yeah. Strawberry blonde, actually, yeah. Officially. You know, who knows what happened, you know. And at the end of the song, I was like, oh, hello, Mr. Gallagher. And, yeah, it was really cool.
That's Mike Rowe, keyboardist, chatting with my guest this morning, Chris Simpson, about his experiences working with Oasis. Just wanted to play that, Chris, just give a little bit of a flavour for for what your podcasts sound like. You've done quite a few so far, as we were saying. Who else have you interviewed?
Well, I mean, I was very lucky how that came about. So I'll just go back to Mike.
Yeah, sure.
He was the first episode, and I totally lucked out with that. I sent him a message saying I was going to Paris anyway to see Noel Gallagher play. And I just said, I've got this idea for a podcast. Would you be up for it? And then I just got this message saying, yeah, let's go for a coffee in Paris. And it was like, oh, wow. Okay, I've actually got to do something now. And we met, and he was such a great guy. And he really loved the concept of the podcast. And what happened, why that was such a big deal, is that was recorded the week they were number one in the UK charts, which meant when I then approached other people, my kind of pitch to them was, yeah, I've already interviewed this guy, and you know, the week they were number one in the UK charts. And off the back of that, I just uploaded it onto the internet. Didn't expect it to kind of be listened to too much. And Mike actually also worked with Sheryl Crow. And completely unprompted, Sheryl Crow had listened to it and kind of written a piece about it and shared it to all her Facebook and Twitter fans, which kind of amounted to about 1.6 million people. And this was 3 days after I launched it, and I really didn't know what I was doing. And it was like, wow, okay, things just got real. And it was great, because she even worked out how, I hadn't even worked out at that stage how to have the play button for the SoundCloud, you know, on the Twitter feed and stuff like that. And she did that all and had the photo on there and stuff, and it was great. And what that meant was, when I started approaching other people, we started getting a lot of yeses straight away. And so the next episode's with Lawrence Juber, who was Paul McCartney's guitarist in Wings, has played with 3 of the 4 Beatles, and has won 2 Grammys as a guitarist and solo artist himself. And that's a really fascinating listen. I mean, he was with Paul McCartney when before and after when John Lennon sadly got he was murdered, wasn't he? And so it's a really interesting vantage point on how Paul reacted to that, not in a kind of intrusive way, but just kind of how that affected his kind of artistic creativity and that kind of thing. And that was that was a bit of musical history that we managed to get from that second episode. And of course, from there, we've had people, as we mentioned earlier, Shane Keyser, Elvis's keyboardist. One episode that was really popular was actually Paul Gallagher, who's Liam and Noel's brother, and that ended up in the national papers because he said a couple of controversial things and stuff like that, and that was just the stuff I kept in. That was such a funny episode. That was really entertaining, and it was more about the perspective of, right, here's these two guys, Liam and Noel, who are just from, you know, ordinary family. And obviously the mass hysteria, and kind of there was a point where it was really kind of blew up, and it was kind of really huge for them, and how he viewed that, and how that affected him and stuff like that. And that's a really interesting episode as well.
I mean, I guess the thing is that you're looking to talk about things that don't get covered in the papers and in the popular, you know, glossy press.
Absolutely, yeah.
Normally, which is what makes it so fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually preparing for one I'm doing on Tuesday, and some of it's a little controversial. One of the first things I've said is, you know, if you don't want to go onto this subject, it's fine, but it won't be covered in a kind of red top newspaper way, you know. There is a reason for it. And I think, as you mentioned earlier, I mean, the episodes, they last about 45 minutes on average, and people are giving me their time. And I think it's because we're kind of delving a bit deeper and, you know, focusing
so
on
it's probably how very refreshing for them to be able to talk to somebody who's actually interested in that depth of understanding of what they're actually doing. And actually, I suppose really what it is perhaps the tabloid press. They want the story, they know what they want, and they're going for it, and their subject, as it were, has to fit in with what they want. But you've sort of turned that on its head, I suppose, which is what makes it so much more interesting.
And you get the freedom to do that in a podcast. There's no, you know, it's my own project, it's my own things, and I'm not kind of reporting to anybody else, or I haven't got an editor or anything like that. So it's my edit, it's how I see it.
And the fact that you had such an amazing launch and a reaction to that from the likes of Sheryl Crow says what sort of approach people in the business are taking to you and to the podcast. So, you know, all credit to you. You said earlier, Chris, that one of the things you want to do, and one of the groups of people you're aiming it at particularly, not exclusively, but you want to help people who are in the business or want to break into the business professionally. Does there seem to be any sort of common theme or common, I don't know, advice that comes through from people you've interviewed for people, you know, who from those who've been there and done that?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the questions I ask to everybody really is, you know, what are the two top, you know, the two or three top tips that you would give young musicians, or you would give yourself looking back, you know, if you could hypothetically. And the general themes that come up are professionalism, know your stuff, going to rehearsals, knowing everything inside out, as well as much as there is the kind of, you know, the sex, drugs and rock and roll and that kind of cliche, you've got to know your stuff as a session musician. You've got to know every part inside out before you go into there, or know that you all know the songs inside out. Hard work and also like not giving up as well. And it's really easy for musicians, and I can speak for myself, you get to a certain age and you think, you know what, I've been hammering away at this for so long. But it's all about not giving up and kind of breaking through, because at the point that you're ready to give up is probably when you're most qualified to then go into the music industry, because you've been doing it for so long and you're experienced. One thing that's really interesting is a lot of people say you've got to tap into different types of music. So don't see it as like, I'm going to play the music that I particularly enjoy, or I particularly enjoy listening to or enjoy playing. That's great, but also have the adaptability to be able to play different styles, and because you will learn stuff and those skills will be transferable from different genres, and you'll need to tap into that when you are a session musician working with different musicians who are doing different things.
So you've got the Mike Farrell one coming up on Monday, which is going to be a good listen. Particularly looking forward to hearing how he responded to that probing question about American Idol.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to think there, because there's so many of these.
He's X Factor, isn't it? Yeah. He's a musical director on American Idol as well as doing this other stuff. Yeah, that's right.
Just remind us how people can listen.
You can download the episodes for free on iTunes, or you can go to our website, which is www.thestageleftpodcast.com. They're actually on YouTube as well, so just give a shout out to my friend Andy Phelan, who has uploaded them onto YouTube for us as well. And follow us on Twitter, Stage Left Pod, on Facebook.com, the Stage Left Podcast.
And have you got any others sort of lined up, you know, waiting in the wings?
Yeah, I mean, this evening I'm interviewing, it's a really big deal this evening, I'm interviewing a lady called Jennifer Batten, who, if anybody remembers the Michael Jackson's live performances, he had this lead guitarist who, she was quite memorable because she had great big blonde hair, and she was an incredible player. And I'm interviewing her tonight, which is such a huge deal for me, because I went to see Michael Jackson on the Bad Tour, which was the kind of the most funny enough, Sheryl Crow was singing backing vocals on that
really?
Tour. Yeah, and it's kind of thought of as like one of the greatest musical tours, from the lighting director to the bassist, everybody was on their game. And she was lead guitarist, and I went to that when I was 4.5 years old, so I don't really remember the actual gig itself. I just remember hiding behind my mum when Thriller started, because I thought Michael Jackson was actually going to turn into a werewolf. But I've obviously watched it all back, and she played with him for 10 years. She actually played at the Super Bowl, which is the highest TV audience of all time, even now.
Wow.
Which is something like over a billion people were watching it worldwide.
That's phenomenal. You can't get your head around that, can you?
Yeah, and he kind of made her sentence. So he did Black or White, and also she played on like Dirty Diana, so he kind of gave her the spotlight, and was she's very I think a lot of your listeners will actually remember if you kind of type in Jennifer Batten. And so I'm interviewing her tonight, so I'm pretty stoked about that.
Chris, it seems that a theme that has come through from your interviews with these various people is hard work and persistence. To really break into the industry, you're clearly working incredibly hard with these podcasts, but absolutely well worth it. You must be absolutely thrilled to be chatting with Jennifer later on.
It's great. I mean, I unfortunately you it's very difficult to make, say, a living out of doing podcasts. So I do actually.
It's not what it's about,
job.
Though, is it?
Absolutely not. I mean, you know, I have a full time job, so I have to release the episodes fortnightly, because it's to doing all the edit and the marketing and stuff like that is very time consuming. But I love it, and I think that there will be, you know, people will be listening to this hopefully for a long time, because it's a great, you know, insight into the working practices of some of the great, you know, the greats.
Chris, it's been a pleasure talking to you this morning. We do need to wind things up there, but we can't leave without playing one of, well, it was the biggest, I think it's still the biggest selling album, wasn't it, Thriller?
It is by miles as well, yeah.
And that is going to take a lot of beating, I mean, particularly with the way that the music industry has changed since the 80s. It possibly will never be beaten. And justifiably one of the, the biggest selling album of all time from, well, certainly one of the biggest, probably one of the most famous people who's ever lived, really, isn't he, MJ?
He is, and what you're going to hear now is actually Jennifer Batten playing Beat It by Michael Jackson live at Wembley in 1988, and it's got a very famous solo that's really, really, really hard to play. It was originally by Eddie Van Halen, and she actually did it at her audition, and that's how she got the gig with Michael Jackson, and so this is her playing it live.
Chris, thanks for joining us. Let's hear it now. Oh, what a fantastic song. Beat It from Michael Jackson's Thriller, of course, his 1983 album. And on lead guitar there, the brilliant Jennifer Batten. What an amazing piece of guitar playing that was. And Jennifer is going to be chatting with my guest this morning, Chris Simpson, and you will be able to hear that on one of his future podcasts. If you want to listen to our chat again this morning, if you missed any of it or you just want to hear it again, it will be up on our website a little bit later on, phoenixfm.com. Follow the link through to programs and feel good Saturday.